the squeeze on. Wilbek! Scores against his old club!
Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You're with us here at the Clock and Talk. And I am back this week. And I thank you to Schwinn and Tony and Savvy for taking over the podcast last week. Well done, Schwinn. Thanks, mate.
Anytime.
And I will welcome Schwinn. He is with us today. And Carl, how are you, mate?
Not too bad. A bit hurt after yesterday's result, but we go on.
Tony's not with us this week. He is somewhere intoxicated or hungover or something along those lines. I don't know. Just the message come through.
I won't be on today, boys.
So, Tony, well wishes and hope you get better, mate. Savvy, we're still searching for Savvy. The search party's out, so we'll continue that because I have no idea where Savvy is. So I'm sure he'll be back next week too. Okay, so I'm going to touch base on a couple of little bits of news that have been floating around before we jump into the Manchester United game. Arsene Wenger come out with some mind games at the start of that. Lacazette, he was playing, he wasn't playing, he was injured, he got pulled off last game, and lo and behold, who jumps out on the starting lineup? Lacazette. So it was a well-played move by Wenger. I thought he had Jose fooled. So also a bit of else going around is... Now, this is an interesting one because I've only just caught the start of this story with Mustafi. A lot of reports going around that Mustafi basically faked his injury, went off. Wenger come out and he said in the press conference, "I don't know what's wrong with him at all." Rumours are speculating that he faked the injury because of the second goal. So we might try and dive into that a little bit later because we also have a question on it as well. So, and just quickly, Barcelona, they've basically some reports coming through from Barcelona that Turan was spotted in London and his agent confirms midfielder is set to leave Barcelona this January and Arsenal are favourites to sign him. So, okay, so that's just a bit of news that's been going around and straight after this we'll get into the Manchester United game. Right, Ashwin, take it away, mate. What was your thoughts on the game? What was your thoughts on the lineup, buddy?
Well, starting with the lineup, starting Lacazette was truly something I would not have expected Wenger to do. I mean, the mind games, right, as you suggested, were in full and flow. And, I mean, I remember speaking to you guys about this before the game even started, or I think a day before the game, perhaps, when there was some information that was flying around that did suggest that Lacazette was spotted at training. I think Tony chimed in with a few facts about that he was, you know, spotted wearing shorts, which suggested that he might be training. You know, there was a lot of stuff that was floating around that did seem to suggest that Lacazette might be involved in one way or the other. I was not surprised in the sense that Lacazette is now sort of coming into bloom at Arsenal. We've seen him sort of settle down and be a part of that team, and he doesn't feel like a loose end at times, which usually can be the case with newer players. So it didn't surprise me that he was on the list, considering also the fact that Welbeck and Giroud are not 100% right now in terms of performance. Welbeck's coming back from injury, and Giroud has sort of been he's been a little wasteful. I mean, other than the Huddersfield game. He, you know, those two goals, of course, helped him. I'm sure his confidence as well. But Lacazette is on any given day, you know, probably one of the first players to make the team sheet. So I like that. I like Arsene trying to give his team a little bit extra, which might not have been perceived from you know, Mourinho in this case. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say about the game. I usually complain and blame the players when we don't get a result. And if I don't see effort, I think it's easy then to sort of look for a reason or reasons to, you know, to assess why we did things a certain way and where things went wrong. And it, you know, it comes off as constructive criticism. And then you always say that, you know, you don't mind losing if you see your players put in the effort and try, and that is something which has lacked at Arsenal recently. But yesterday, that was not the case. Yesterday, we dominated the game. We were not clinical, and Manchester United were. They jumped on the opportunities they had, which were few and far between. But considering that we dominated possession and we dominated, creating chances, I still can't say that I'm okay with the result, because I don't have anyone to blame. And as fans, that's sort of what we look for. And I'm hurt. I mean, I hate saying this, because the boys tried really hard and they were very, very impressive. We created so many chances. We were passing the ball inside their box at times, and we played really well. But I'm sad, boys. I'm sad. Take it away, Carl.
Righto, Carl. Let's go to you, Mike.
Yeah, going on from the Twins' point, I think a very disappointing result. I think David De Gea has assured himself, he is the best goalkeeper in the world right now, in my opinion. Not ever, as loads of Man United fans have been saying. But he's also assured us that he is the Messiah. He is the second coming of Christ. De Gea made 14 saves yesterday. I don't know. Unreal. I mean, with the double save he made from... I think it was Lacazette and Sanchez. That defied belief. I think he saved them yesterday. Definitely, I think we deserve to win the game. Lacazette was really on it. Even if Lacazette was fit or not, I wasn't sure if I would have put him in straight away, because I know Giroud loves a goal against Man United. So does Welbeck. But Lacazette put in a great performance yesterday, and it was a good dose of mind games from Wenger. It nearly paid off, but obviously De Gea being the only spanner in the works. But yeah, really, really, I'm proud of the players' performance yesterday. It was just a shame that we conceded two in the first 15 minutes of the game. And one off thing to mention is I hate Jesse Lingard.
It's unfortunate, and I did. When Mustafi or Kashani, and I was talking to Carl earlier, and I said, Kashani, it's probably one of the worst games I've actually watched him play. And no discredit to the guy, I love the guy and everything, but them mistakes and let's go on the Kashani one, Carl, it was not him. It's not usually what he brings to the table. He's usually solid.
Yeah, when you consider Kashani, you don't consider defensive errors. He's normally a very like-minded, stable-headed player on the pitch. He doesn't really make that many risks, unlike, you know, Monreal. He goes forward a lot, and that's a bit risky, and he usually plays off to perfection. But Kashani's normally there. He's normally kind of conservative with his tackles, and they're good tackles. So, yeah, it was a little bit disappointing yesterday to see him like that. I think the whole idea of us coming into the game, I think we were a bit confident. A few of the Arsenal players on social media saying that the Great Wall of Arsenal with the Mustafi, Kashani and Monreal, it was always going to crumble sooner rather than later, and we've got that now. So I think we just rebuild from this point. It, as I said, a very disappointing result. We deserve to get the 3 points, but hey-ho, you don't win them all.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I'll just play you a little bit of interview from Joe Sayar for the match on the red card involving Popka.
Your thoughts on the red card?
I have no thoughts. To speak about the red card, I have to speak about Koscielny action. I have to speak about Arsenal players loving the beauty of the grass. I have to speak a lot of things, and I don't.
Had you lost this game, it would have been a very big gap indeed, but you can now go into that Manchester City game with a huge amount of confidence.
And just a match. The next match is CSKA, and we still need a little bit to qualify.
So what's your thoughts on that, Shui?
Yeah, it's Jose being Jose. I mean, if Pogba was not sent off, and if they hadn't lost Pogba for the next three games, he wouldn't be saying that. It's that simple. Mm. If hold everything else constant, hold every other so-and-so called dive that Jose is referring to by the grass there, hold all of that constant, if Pogba was not sent off, if that was a yellow card, which in my opinion it should have been a sending off because Pogba stepped on Hector Bellerin. I mean, how else do you justify that? So it's just Jose being Jose. He's a little sour. I can empathize with him because, you know, you just got Pogba back, and ever since he's come back, that team's changed. I mean, Pogba is one of the best players in the world who can instantly transform any team he gets into. I don't think there's any arguing with that. So I can understand Jose's disappointment. I'm sure he's a little disappointed in Pogba reaching out for that ball too, because that was a little bit stupid from his end. But it's just him being a little sour. We know he does that a lot. He tries to be, you know, he tries to say things without saying things. That's his classic thing, by saying, I want to say this, but I'm not going to say this. Yeah, Jose, sure, whatever. Mm. But it's just him being sour, and nothing much to make out of that, I feel.
Okay. Same thoughts with you, Carl?
Yeah. It's always a case of sour grapes with Mourinho, especially in the Arsenal match. He should have just, the fact that he's won that game, a game that he was, he should have lost. He should just take away from it. But, yeah, definitely red card. He just stepped right on Bellerin's hamstring. It looked like a nasty, nasty challenge. I doubt whether it was intentional, but still, that's a straight red. And I don't think that can be contested at all.
I'll probably get a bit of criticism here from a couple of Arsenal fans. Look, for me, it was a red. But Bellerin, I don't know, you guys notice, he put himself in a really awkward situation. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I get that, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying like he was in the wrong, but it was just, I don't know what he was trying to do.
I mean, I agree with you. Yeah, I was just about to say I agree with you, Tez, but I feel that, I think Bellerin was just trying to make a play on the ball, and yes, it was a weird one, but I think Pogba's reaction and what followed was just by textbook definitions, just not right at all, because he stepped on someone who was who had his knee to his foot all the way on the ground. So I know what you're saying, because it was like a semi-slide, if you will.
Yeah, it was an odd position to get yourself in. Go on.
Yeah,
Carl.
I mean, you can say that about a lot of players yesterday, I feel.
That's right. While we're touching on red cards and penalties and whatnot, late in the game there was two chances. And I don't want to blame the referee here, because at the end of the day, it was the first 15 minutes that cost us the game with the two errors from Koscielny and Mustafi. So I'm not going to be belting up the referee. However, there was one on Welbeck and one on Lacazette in the penalty box late in the game. Did you see that, Schwinn?
I did. I think the Danny Welbeck one was quite a clear case of penalty. I mean, this happened earlier this season when West Brom visited Arsenal, and there was a similar chance that West Brom had where Mustafi took down Jay Rodriguez in the box. But Rodriguez quickly got back on his feet, and he got a shot away, albeit it was saved by a check. But it was a clear penalty. If he had stayed down on the ground with his hands raised or something, it would have been a penalty for West Brom. I think that's exactly what happened yesterday, except Danny Welbeck didn't sell it enough. I mean, there was clear contact. There's no denying that. Both players, you know, sort of, I think the defender who slid into Welbeck sort of took him down. Welbeck did raise his hand, but it sort of lacked conviction. It felt like he was, you know, sort of fishing for it. And that late in the game, I don't blame the ref for feeling like that. But the Lacazette one, I don't think that was a penalty. I only saw it the once when it happened live. I haven't seen it yet again. So maybe you guys disagree with me on that. But as I was watching it happening, I didn't get the instinct that it was a penalty. So I'm not sure how Carl feels about that or how you feel about that.
Carl?
I definitely remember the Danny Welbeck one, and I'm definitely saying that's a penalty. I think, wasn't there another shout for Koscielny? Didn't he get felled in the box in the first half? I think there was that scuffle in the box where it was like six other Arsenal players in there.
Yes,
they're all firing at De Gea, and then he got tripped. And again,
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think there was a shout for handball, maybe, when Koscielny was sort of in the box and he sort of was shielding the ball and someone
he was trying to turn and someone either got a handball or tackled him or whatever, and I thought that was a penalty as well, but again that probably would have been a hard spot for the referee. But you know, we keep on talking about these penalty shots, but the game's passed now. I don't know.
Yeah, look, and that's why I said straight up, I didn't want to blame the referee because, look, at the end of the day, it was our fault that we conceded them two goals in the first 15 minutes. That really changed the game because what options did we have? We had to go on the attack and we had to open the game up a bit. When you're down 2-0 after 15 minutes, you've got to do something. And credit to Wanger, he did. He opened the game up and the players put in 110% effort. There was no doubting that. I don't want to... A win's a win. If I win it on penalties, well, then I win it on penalties. However, I can't blame the referee for a couple of... You know what I'm saying, Schwinn? It changed the whole dimension of the game. When you're down 2-0 after 15 minutes, you've got to rely on, more than just penalties.
Oh, completely agree. In fact, I was speaking to a buddy of mine before the game started, and he's a Man United supporter, and I was curious to know what he felt like in terms of what tactics Mourinho would employ coming into the game, because the picture before the game was such that you would expect United to go for the win, considering, you know, they're playing City next week, and City's anyways running ahead with it. So United doesn't really have that sort of buffer zone where they can sort of, you know, come into these games and not look for the result. And after my conversation with him, to me, it felt like the first 10 minutes of the game is usually when Arsenal playing at home can be a little nervy. We try to come flying and we try to get that quick goal in those first 10 minutes. That's sort of our game plan coming into any game at home. And that leaves us open at the back. So while I was talking to my friend, I was telling him that if the first 10 minutes we can go ahead with and we can sort of maintain it at 0-0 or maybe Arsenal getting the lead, then we'll find out between the minutes 10 and 20 what Jose's tactics are for the game. Because at that point, the game has settled and we'll see the tactics kick in.
Keep going, yep.
So, I mean, I just felt that although you're right that the referee, you know, could have decided the game, but we should definitely not pinpoint the referee for mistakes because he was fine. I don't think he made too many errors. I think we were naive, you know, just thinking about what Mourinho, what a typical Mourinho would want would be on the counter, would be to get that 1-0 and to, you know, park the bus essentially. And we were so naive going into that. I mean, you know, you did touch upon Koscielny and Mustafi, but those are suicidal errors in a team that will look to exploit your weaknesses. Just kick it into touch, hoover it up the field. You know, I don't care. Shoot, give it back to Cech. Shoot it at Lingard's head, you know? I don't care. Just get it out of the way.
Just get it out of the road. And I think, remember we discussed against after the Huddersfield game, that if we make errors like that against Manchester United, they will capitalise on it.
Yep.
And they did.
Absolutely. And they did. And credit to them. It's such a naive mistake. I have nothing else to describe that. It's naive.
Carl, if you weren't to watch the game and you were blindfolded, I'll give you some stats. So, ball possession, Arsenal 75%, Manchester United 25%. Arsenal, 33 total shots, Manchester United 8. Passes 562 to Manchester United's 147. Now, get down to shots on target, 15 by Arsenal, 4 by United. Shots off target, 6-1. Blocked shots, 12-3. Shots off the woodwork, 2-1. Now, if you were to have a look at them stats without knowing the score, who would you think won that game?
Well, I'd say Arsenal on the surface, but considering this is what happens to me on FIFA on a daily basis, I'd say Man United.
wasn't De Gea good there, be all honestly. Look.
He was amazing. He was immense for Man United. And I recall seeing something this morning from Jose Mourinho himself saying about the Man United Player of the Year being De Gea. And him saying the fact that a goalkeeper's winning the Best Player of the Year award means that there's something wrong.
I definitely believe
in that.
Yeah, yeah. Who was the standout player for you? For the Arsenal team?
I'd say maybe Lacazette or Ozil. Mm. I think Ozil had a good game again. I'd also point to Ramsey. His contributions for the Arsenal team in the past few games have been very, very good. Mm. And I think he's quite underrated. I'm quite a fan of Ramsey now. I wasn't before the start of the season, but he's coming to his own in that role next to Xhaka.
Schwinn?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Carl on that. I thought Ramsey was good. I don't want to talk too much about the tactics and about how things played out, because I feel that whatever our game plan was going into the game was sort of thrown out the window early on.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll of course get into Mustafi and this injury that he might have picked up. But once Iwobi came on, it wasn't quite sure whether we were still playing a four-defender system or a three-defender system, because although we only had four defenders on the field, Ramsey was dropping very deep to get the ball and to make plays, which is not his strength. But he had so much effort yesterday, and I mean, I was taking a few notes as I was watching this game again later yesterday, that he was running all over the place, and he plays with a lot of pride for the football club, which I don't see from a lot of other players in our team. But he was really good. His effort showed, just like a lot of other players. Lacazette was good. His movement yet again was fantastic. There was a chance that fell to Xhaka in the first half, which he put wide. But Lacazette's movement with the ball to sort of get a shot away that hit the post, and I think it was a crossbar, and then it fell to Xhaka was brilliant. He was very good. I don't think he didn't seem injured. From the light, from the looks of it.
No, he didn't seem it, did he?
Yeah, he seemed sharp. He seemed sharper than Alexis, who gave the ball 34 fucking times away.
I was going to ask you, what was your thoughts on Sanchez?
Frustrating. Extremely frustrating. Yeah. And I don't want to blame him, because I know he doesn't want to be there. You know, I mean, I feel it always gives someone perspective if you try to put yourself in another person's shoes and try to understand their situation. So I'm not going to slate him and completely write him off, because no one can deny his quality. On his day, Alexis Sanchez is unfucking stoppable. But if you're not in the mood for it, then you're not going to play. It doesn't matter whether you're wearing Arsenal colors or Chilean colors. And he's just not there anymore. I mean, you see Mesut Ozil play, and you can tell that he wants to play. Now, whether that's for Arsenal or whether that's to increase his stock so that there's better clubs coming in for him, that's a different argument altogether. But it doesn't seem like Alexis Sanchez is trying at times, and it feels like he'll go for, you know, that superb pass. But the risk is just not worth it, you know? If you're opening the play completely from a very risky pass, then go for it. But he just tries things sometimes which are audacious, and the risk-to-reward ratio is completely off. No wonder he gives the ball so much, because it's the really tough pass that he tries for almost inevitably.
Yeah, then that's what shits me about him a little bit. He does this, I don't know, what, like you say, it's stuff that you see Messi do. But Messi's good at doing it. Sanchez tries it and just fucks it up. And I think, just play with the team, create fucking opportunities, create runs, and stop doing your stupid shit passes. Like, I'm no fucking professional football player, but from what I see, on my view, I see him run around like a bit of a headless chook, gives the ball away a lot, but then when he scores a goal, he gets the man of the match.
Hmm.
Yeah, and Tony said this like on our last pod, that if we had won that Huddersfield game just 2-0, or, you know, just, I think Sanchez's goal was the second, or was it the third goal? I think it was the third goal.
Third goal.
Yeah, but he was saying that if that was the scoreline, 3-0 instead of 5-0, then Alexis Sanchez would get the man of the match, because that's the perception that he has created about himself, with proof. You know, he's been a fantastic player for Arsenal Football Club. There's no denying that. But there's also no denying that in recent in this season, he's not been on it. I mean, his numbers speak to that, and you can see it on the field. He just doesn't seem in it, and I guess we should have known because this was pretty clear even in the summer. So fuck us for being fucking idiots and believing that he'd probably pull his shit together.
What's your thoughts on Sanchez, Carl?
I think going back to his point about why he's been playing badly, and you're kind of alluding to Messi, I think you can question motive, because Messi, when he's doing all his his godlike stuff on the pitch, it's like he's doing it for the betterment of the team. He's not doing it for the betterment of himself. Mm. He's not doing it for another Ballon d'Or. But Alexis Sanchez, I think he's just doing it for himself at times. When he runs himself into a cul-de-sac in the corner and starts trying to do little roulettes and Berber spins and stuff like that, you're like, is that all that necessary? Mm. I mean, you've got Ramsey coming short, and I know they don't like each other, but even then, the professionals on the pitch. If you got any player, let's say any player coming short, and you start trying to do body feints and stuff to get out of the way of like five defenders, then just choose the logical option and pass it off. He just comes across as a showboat at times. I mean, I love the guy. He puts in great performances at times, but then that's only when his head's in it. And to be, to be a star player for our club, a prestigious club, you need to have your mind set in on the game all the time, not just on yourself. Mm. And that's a particular pet peeve of Arsenal fans, I think.
And just to clear it up, I'm not comparing the guy to Messi. I'm just comparing because I know people are going to come back at me later and go, oh, fuck, this clown's fucking saying Sanchez is Messi. No, I'm just comparing. Messi does it good. Messi's a brilliant player. Sanchez just almost tries too hard to do what he does, but just fails. So
I will add one more thing just to be fair. And this is a particular thing that I've noticed, and we're only talking about Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez in this situation. So I feel there's one thing that we're missing here, which is Chile failing to qualify for the World Cup. And the fact that Alexis Sanchez seems to already have a one-foot door into Manchester City. Mm. Now, if you want to believe reports, then Ozil doesn't have a club that he would be willing to go to, or that would be at the level that he's willing to go to. And Mesut Ozil also has the World Cup to look forward to this summer. Mm. If there's a dip in form for Mesut Ozil, which, I mean, you don't expect to, because he sees things which are out of this world, Yogi Löw might look to drop him from the starting 11.
Yeah, I saw you saying. Yeah.
But Alexis Sanchez doesn't have that same motivation for the summer. You know, in the beginning of the season, I feel when Chile was still on their way to qualify, you saw a little more. Alexis Sanchez had to, be relevant by the end of this season. And now that he's lost that motivation, and he almost seems to have a club that's willing to take him on, if you want to believe reports, I think that's also something that plays into his whole dynamic. Just to be fair, I mean, when we do criticize, we pick up points, but we should also see why certain things should be happening. And we're often called the biased clock and talk. So I think it's only fair that we bring up some of this stuff. But just something else for our listeners to keep in mind, because these things do affect footballers, even if you think they don't.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. And let's face it, from the end of the summer transfer window, it was almost like his whole body language and everything, and then he's been on a roller coaster of a downhill spiral and not in so much form, but in disappointment. Like, I'm disappointed I didn't end up at City. Now I'm disappointed Chile didn't make the World Cup. It's got to affect the guy.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel for Alexis Sanchez because if you want to believe reports, then he does want to be at Arsenal. He does want to succeed at Arsenal. He does want Arsenal to go and buy the big name players, or the players who can instantly come into the squad and improve the squad. And there's no denying excuse me, that there are places where we can improve, even our strongest 11. So I feel his pain. Mm. But at the same time, when you are playing for a football club, you got to play for the name on the front of the shirt. Mm. You know, that's what matters at the end of the day. That's what you'll be remembered for at the end of the day. Mm. You know, no one remembers how many goals Tony Adams scored, you know, but they do remember every time he slid into a fucking challenge and came out, you know, maybe damaged a little bit, but he didn't fucking care, you know.
But we also remember him as he loved the club, like, you know, he had that pride when he put on that Arsenal jersey.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair to Alexis Sanchez, no one will have that same level of, you know, love for the club unless you're from around, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a whole different, again, we could probably do a whole podcast on that. But my whole point is that Alexis Sanchez just is not in there at Arsenal. He's not there mentally. I don't think he can wait, you know, for it to strike January or maybe in the summer if that's when he moves. And although I wouldn't blame him, I just want him out because he's not helping the club. And I know, I mean, from last week, this is a big, big contrast to what we were talking about. Mm. But if you look at Alexis's performance throughout, it's usually been pretty consistently average, if not bad.
Let's say, and this is hypothetically because we don't know what happens. Let's say he goes in January and nobody else comes in. Who takes that position?
Welbeck, I would imagine. Yeah. I would imagine some serious rotation, depending on who we are playing, with Giroud every now and then up there. Mm. I could see Welbeck and Giroud, basically whoever is doing better on form, whoever fits in better tactically, depending on our opposition, share one of those two spots. And of course, Lacazette might be able to be moved around because he is capable of being moved around across our top three. But I don't see Alexis Sanchez leaving in January. It'll be too much of a loss, especially if we are out of the Premier League and we're looking to exploit the Europa League. We will need Alexis Sanchez.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I'm just going to play you a little audio from Wenger's match report yesterday.
I suppose the game was lost in the first 10 minutes because you gave yourself too much to do.
I think we didn't start well at all at the back, and we are guilty of that. But overall, our performance was, I must say, through patches, absolutely brilliant. And despite the 2-0 down, we should have come back. We had enough chances. Were we too nervous? But I think we produced excellent quality, and we're not decisive enough, nor in our own box, nor in their box. And of course, psychologically, it was a big blow to be 2-0 down at the start. When you play at home, that cannot happen.
You've been extremely secure defensively, particularly at home. You've not been making mistakes like that. Can you put your finger on what happened today?
I think our desire to dictate our strengths at the back was not good enough from the start, and we're too bit on the edge, maybe, mentally and overall. You cannot be at home in a game like that and not be dictate your strength from the start when you're a defender.
There were so many opportunities, and David De Gea deserves credit for making some extraordinary saves, but how you only scored once will be a mystery.
That's a mystery, yes, but he was the man of the match by a mile, not the best player, certainly the Man United team, because he had 33 shots on goal today.
And I think 3 or 4 minutes from the end of normal time, and there were, I think, 5 added minutes, you had what I think on reflection most people would consider a clear penalty, Damian, on Welbeck.
Yes, but I don't want to talk about that. We know that you don't get them.
It's obviously disappointing to lose to Manchester United when you've had this long winning run, 12 consecutive home wins, but you know, it's not irretrievable. Your team are playing well and did play extremely well for a lot of today.
We played well, but it's nothing more frustrating when you have that quality of performance and nothing to show for in the end, you know. And on one side, of course, I feel extremely sorry for the players because their attitude was impeccable until the end. But I feel as well when you go in a big game, you cannot make the mistakes that we made today from the start on.
So that was the press conference on the post-match after the game. What's your take on it, Carl?
I agree with what Wenger said about the, you know, the sort of desire and the play that we formed in that match. I think we played very, very well, as I've said. Yeah, De Gea was definitely man of the match, as he said. We did pay for our mistakes in the first 10 minutes. As Schwinn said earlier, about 10 minutes being our kind of nervy moments where we try and, you know, get the match kind of done and dusted with a quick goal. And unfortunately, it was Man United who got that goal, not us, and that kind of displaced us, I guess, in terms of our tactics. But, yeah, I agree with what you said. I'd be angry and disappointed as well if I was a manager of a team who had 33 shots and 15 on target and still lost to a team that had perhaps less than a third than what we had on target.
Funny enough, though, and I'll go to Schwinn, but funny enough, he looks upbeat. He didn't look like he had his hands in it. You know, he was quite impressed with the you know, he's quite happy with the match. Unfortunately, not happy with the result, though.
Yeah, and who's going to blame him, right? I mean, as I was listening to that interview, and I hadn't so far, I mean, even I was feeling a little optimistic, and I was paying attention to what he was saying. And I mean, you can't say anything that he said was wrong, because he was spot on about everything. You know, he gave De Gea the credit that he deserved. He gave our players the credit that we deserved. And he also pointed out the mistakes we made. So I don't think any reasonable man would argue with Arsene Wenger about what he said. I will, however, ask a question to you guys. And this is a Man United question, so feel free to be biased if you will. Mm-hmm. But if you were a Man United supporter, and I don't mean this in any you know, demeaning way. Let's try and be a little more realistic here. But if you were a Man United supporter, would you be happy? Would you be delighted by this performance? Not by the result. You know, let's not look at the result in isolation, because a 3-0 win, 3-1 win at the Emirates or anywhere away from home is a good result in the Premier League. But if you're a Man United supporter, are you happy with this sort of football being played? Do you put results over the performance? Maybe you do when it comes to an away game against the top six, but I think we've seen that there have been times when United have done that even at home, and maybe even against, you know, not the tops, the big six teams. So, I mean, I'm just curious to understand what, you know, you guys think about this, and maybe even if there's Man United supporters listening into this, then what they feel about it. So have a crack at it.
Well, I'll answer first, because I've spoken to a few Manchester United fans today, Carl, and a lot of them are quite happy they got the 3 points. They are happy what De Gea done, and, you know, praise De Gea, he's the wall and whatnot. But they know deep down that was a game that was determined in the first 15 minutes, and it changed the whole structure of the game. A couple of them said, look, we were disappointed once again. Look, we went up 2-0, and he does what he does, and he parks the bus. At one stage, I thought, didn't realise, they had 7 at the back. So when you're watching your team play with 7 at the back and you're in front 2-0, you're fucking shitting yourself, because you're thinking, Arsenal are going to keep... they're going to keep attacking and keep attacking and keep coming at us. And here we are. We're a team who's just going to play a defensive football and try and now keep... obviously, they're up 2-0. But there was no confidence that they could get the job done. Carl?
I agree with that. And... you know, the way they were playing against us, we were dominating, and you could see from the 75% possession, it was like us against you know, relegation battle side team. And usually when they park the bus, they get the results. But I think that was the first time, I think, when they parked the bus against top six team, that their defensive tactics didn't work, you could say. I think we breached their defensive line many, many times. I mean, look at the shot statistic. But, I mean, I know they got, 12 block shots, but even you know, throwing that out of the window, you've got De Gea as your final line of defence. And if you're just if you're just relying on your keeper for a game against top six club, there's something wrong about your defence. Because if I don't know, it's just, I think that they relied, as I said, they relied too much on their goalkeeper yesterday, and that's not a good thing going into the Manchester derby. I'd say that you need to fix up with the defending. A lot of training drills need to be put on, marking and such like. I mean, you've got the likes of Aguero and Jesus. They had a bit of a problem with Lacazette yesterday. Think about the world of problems they're going to have with Jesus and or Aguero making them darting runs into the box from De Bruyne's like 40-yard passes.
I think I'm just going to butt in and make a remark real quick, Tez. But I think Carl makes a very good point, because if you look at the post-match reaction, you know, Mourinho is getting all the praise, and you know, United players are getting all the praise, and rightly so. But how can you praise Mourinho for the tactics? Because as Carl said, that we broke past their defense on several occasions.
Absolutely.
So in essence, they were bailed out by perhaps the performance of the season by David De Gea. So how can a manager sit on the touchline and take credit for such a performance?
I put it to you, De Gea wasn't in goals. We win 6-3.
Oh yeah, we embarrassed them.
You know.
Yeah, I mean we take down their shorts and do stuff to their butts.
Actually, that third goal Manchester United scored. Now, I know it was a bit of a mistake by Kashani. Pogba come down and he couldn't do much in the box. He made him look stupid, right? Pass it over. But the game had already changed at that time. Like, we only had two at the back. We were all out attack.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that was naive again. I mean, when you know that Pogba is going to be making those runs, and his strength, his skill, his vision, he'll find that incisive pass, and when United's not getting that many chances, they will look to make those chances count, that odd chance that pops up every 20 minutes. And we paid for it dearly. I mean, we were toothless in defense. We could have left our defenders on the bench or at home and just played 10 attackers, and the result would have been the same.
I put it to you also, had we not gone down 2-0 in the first 15 minutes, and I know this is going to be, you know, we're never going to know. But how do you reckon the match would have played out?
I mean, it's difficult to say, as you said, and I would like to believe that things would have been better, because if we were able to solidify the first 10 minutes and the tempo of the game would have been set in terms of us attacking and them sitting back, I think they would have had a tough time in order to, you know, to get up and get something out of attacks every now and then. I think that first goal gave them a lot of confidence. And that second goal was maybe the final nail in the coffin almost. I mean, we created chances, but it just wasn't going in. So I don't know how things would have panned out, obviously, but I would like to believe that we would have schooled them.
Yeah. Okay, we'll be back straight off this, because I want to touch with you guys on this Mustafi theory. Okay, so there's a few rumours going around with this Mustafi, and just let's get your thoughts. We'll go to you, Carl. I'll just straight up. Would Mustafi go off and fake an injury because he was the blame for the goal?
I'm going to first go with the Mustafi skeptics and say yes, and the following thing to go up with that was why. Let's think about back at Stamford Bridge, I think it was last season or the start of the season, where Hazard absolutely spun Francis Coquelin around, where he got that amazing solo goal against us, and Coquelin didn't go off. And you'd expect that. I'm just touching on that as just like an occasion for an Arsenal player who's also been schooled about by another player. But you'd expect, especially a defender who, you know, he's kind of been our captain. If you take away Koscielny's armband and you say which player on the pitch looks like the most likely to be a captain apart from Cech, you'd say Mustafi, because he kind of marshals the defence. He a lot of call outs to defenders, keeping a good back line. And I'd actually be very surprised if that was the reason, if he faked his injury, because I think just before we started recording this podcast, I had a look at the replay on that second goal scored by the little dabbing merchant, Jesse Lingard,
yeah.
Where Mustafi's, obviously, he's tried a bit too much. He's been dispossessed. I think it was Lukaku. He might have left something on his foot or his heel, whatever. He did a little limp and started kind of jogging. It looked a bit like an injury, but it didn't look like an injury that had forced someone off.
Mm-hmm.
It really didn't. It seemed a little bit too soft, in my opinion. So I think there's definitely an argument there to say that he faked an injury. And if that's true, that's very, very concerning.
And this all come about, and it caught me by surprise, but Glenn, who follows on Twitter at @clockend_talk, he actually put this question up, Schwinn.
Hi, guys. Just got a quick question on Mustafi. There's rumours gathered around after the second goal was conceded that he faked his injury after he left the field because of a mistake he made which led to the goal. My question is, what are your thoughts on this? Keep up the good works. Check.
Yeah, so and that's what type of raised my eyebrows to, because I didn't actually see or hear about any reports until Glenn posted that question. I thought, that's when I had a look into it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing about it as well. But, I mean, I would like to believe that there's no player at our football club who would resort to something like that. And if I actually look at it with skepticism, I think Mustafi would be one of the last players that I would sort of put in that mold. I'm not sure. I don't know the facts, so I'm all but speculating here. But I don't see it happening. I don't see how that could be the case, because it was still early in the game. So although we were 2-0 down, the next goal could have changed the game completely. And I think Wenger knew that. And in order to solidify our defense, Mustafi's one of the critical aspects of the defense. As Carl said, that he's one of the leaders on the pitch. You can see him talking, gesticulating, and making gestures to get his team and his defense in place. I think it's extremely harsh if people are speculating about this. I think it's also irresponsible if it's not true, because after a long time, the Arsenal fan base has been united. Ever since that Tottenham game. Funny I said united, but. There has been some unity at the fan base, and there's been this skip in our step, looking forward to Arsenal games. At least there has been for me, and I sort of sense that on social media as well. So this could be something which could tear apart the fan base, because people would be camped in the realist versus the romantic sort of the camps, and making their own opinions on this. But I'm not sure. I don't think he would have done that. I think that's extremely, extremely responsible if that's untrue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to think that that is untrue as well, because I'd hate to think that a player would do something like that. So
To be clear, him being subbed off. I know he limped off, but him being subbed off, and considering that we did not bring another defender on, but an attacker on in the form of Iwobi. It could have been a tactical change as well. Wenger could have wanted to switch to a more attacking system from that moment itself, irrespective of what Colin Lewin told the bench. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We don't know the facts. And I think that's what Wenger said as well, that even he doesn't know what the extent of the injury is for Mustafi. But I just can't see that. I cannot see someone being so out of confidence, especially considering the string of results we've had so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I'm shocked to actually be reading these stories. Actually, that Mustafi, I know Arsenal fans are blaming him for the goal. There's theories out there that he's faked the injury. A lot of it went on because Wenger said, "Well, I don't know what's up with him." But let's face it, would Wenger know at that time, straight after the game?
Yeah, I mean, he would, right? He would know what sort of an injury it is, what sort of an extent it is. It was still early in the game, so I'm sure the physios had a look at him in the dressing room. And I think when Wenger said that, he didn't really mean to say that we have no idea what's wrong with him. I think he just meant to say that, listen, it's been a tough game. That's not really been on the top of my list. Mm. He probably went into that locker room and tried to tell those players that, listen, just for 1 second, forget that scoreline. Look at everything else you guys did today and take the day off. You know, his number one role at that point was to bring those players back from cocooning. And I'm sure Mustafi is going to be a miss if he's injured or if his confidence is down. But to look into him first thing you're going into the locker room would be unfair to everyone else who put a decent 90-minute shift in.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree totally. Okay, look, we've got heaps of questions from our followers, so we'll get into it straight after this, eh? Jeez, I feel like I'm at a nightclub, shall we? Okay. Right, so what have we got? There's some friggin' few of us are hammering. Vish at Vish AAD. He's a regular of ours, and thank you, Vish, for your support, mate. It's really great to see questions coming through. However, he has taken the task on Shaka. That's all right.
That's all, Carl. I'm gonna just let Carl do the talking on this one.
Okay, Carl. So we need a proper defensive midfielder. Shaka is a poor screen of defence, unlike Matic or Kante. He let Martial through for the first goal and Lingard for the third. His positioning is poor and he lacks the courage to put his body on the line to prevent goals.
I think the last part of that question was wrong, saying he lacks the courage, because I just think he's just too slow. He's not agile enough to be that. In the modern game, in terms of defensive midfielders, you need someone that's actually quite agile. Not saying they have to be short like Kante or anything, but you kind of want that super hybrid of someone being tall and agile and able to tackle. And unfortunately, Xhaka can't really tackle. If we're talking about him as being like a defensive wall, it'd probably be like a transparent one you could probably break through easily. He's like glass, mm-hmm. if you're thinking about being defensive. Yeah, we definitely need another defensive midfielder, but I think this is just a testament to Wenger's idea of in that centre of that midfield, it's just being too nice. I think the Xhaka and Ramsey partnership, when you're going offensively, I think it's great. I think you've got Ramsey playing up front, usually. I mean, he can drop deep. His work rate is amazing, and Xhaka just sits back and pings them like delicious 40-yard balls sometimes. But when it comes to defensive, Xhaka doesn't really cut it. And, you know, if it wasn't for this three-at-the-back system, I think we could have brought a defensive midfielder in the summer and we'd be good with the midfield three we would have had, maybe like a Fabinho, or I wouldn't say Nzonzi because he's kind of the same mold as Xhaka, except for the fact that he can actually put a tackle in. But I definitely agree, just not with the fact that he's saying that he lacks courage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Schwinn,
so before we go there, Tez, what are your thoughts on that question?
Oh,
and, I mean, I know you like Xhaka, and so do I, but I'm just curious. I mean, I'm not trying to pull a cheeky one here, but I'm actually curious to know what you think about that.
I thought he had an all right game yesterday. Look, it wasn't his one of the, it was, I thought he defended pretty well. I didn't really notice that a couple of them goals were let in through him, through his positioning. So I'm going to go back and have a look at that, Vish. But I love what he offers to Arsenal, because he pings when he's on song, he pings them balls straight. You know, it's just brilliant to watch. He's still a young player. He's still got a lot to bring to the club. I feel and I don't want to go on a Xhaka rant here because everyone knows. Look, I'm a big fan of Xhaka. I like his attitude. I think he'll bring a lot to Arsenal in the future. However, he does have to start bringing a little bit more to the table now. He has been a little bit disappointing the last couple of games. I think his probably best game was earlier in the season. Was it Swansea City? I'm just trying to think now. earlier in the season, but the last couple of games he hasn't been the Shaka that I actually, you know, fell in love with, I suppose. So yeah, anyway.
No, I think that's a good point, and I think we jump on Grant a little too much at times. I mean, this isn't a shot at Vish, but I do think that there are times when he's sort of picked upon unjustly. I mean, there were mistakes, of course, that he made yesterday, and who didn't? But to sort of isolate Xhaka, it doesn't seem right to me, considering that if you really want to isolate someone, it'd probably be Koscielny and Mustafi for giving the ball away 5 yards from goal.
Yeah, well, Xhaka would be my go-to guy, you know, for yesterday's mistakes, like, and as you said, Koscielny, and I said earlier in this podcast, Koscielny was probably one of these worst games I've seen him play in an Arsenal jersey. And that will segue to our next question, because MAA Gaming has said, is Koscielny finished, and who do we replace him with? Schwinn.
No, not finished at all. We don't replace him yet. Next question, please.
Okay.
One game does not kill a player. I think very often we jump on players' cases. He had a mare, and players do that. I mean, it's okay, boys. You know, we will lose games. Let's not forget that. But to just completely write off our captain, good Lord, don't support our club if that's how you feel about players, because that's not Arsenal Football Club. You can buy class.
Look,
100% agree.
Yeah, and I have to as well. I'm sorry. Look, as much as I don't try and be negative as well, but he had one bad game. You know, he come back from injury, and I thought he's been playing pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if there's one player finished at Arsenal Football Club, it's Alexis Sanchez.
Okay, well, Vish, again, and we'll stick with you because Koscielny wasn't, it was a pretty short answer. Is Cech still a world-class goalkeeper? Is he past his best, and should we now be looking to replace him? Titles are won by a world-class defence, which starts with the goalkeeper. Clearly, our first choice is not good enough.
That's a brilliant question. And in fact, when I was at the pub yesterday watching the game with some mates, after the game, I went and took a piss, and I had an epiphany, as one of my friends called it, that when we bought Peter Cech, and we bought him, of course, for his experience and the accolades and, you know, his performances, what I was thinking about was the Chelsea defense was always set in a way where Peter Cech was, where his work was minimized. He was an out-and-out shot stopper.
Yeah.
You know, the players, his back line would do very well to block shots and to give attackers a small window of getting off the perfect shot. So if the shot's not perfect, you won't be able to beat someone of Peter Cech's quality.
Mm.
However, at Arsenal, our defense is nowhere as robust as a traditional Chelsea defense was back in the day. So now that Cech is growing even older, we're expecting a little more from him in terms of, you know, his work rate, in terms of the saves he'll make. It's not the traditional saves that Peter Cech is maybe used to making. Hmm. Now, I know I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here, but it's just something more to think about. I'm not giving this as an answer. It's just something to think about. Having said that, I think he should have done better on the first goal. I think Nacho Monreal was out of place, out of position. He got sucked in to Paul Pogba, and that gave Valencia a little bit time to sort his feet and get a shot off. But it did go, it did creep into the goal from between Peter Cech's legs. So, I mean, I'm sure he could have done better in a few instances. I'm sure our defense could have done better in some instances. But I do not believe that Peter Cech will be someone we'll be looking to replace in this summer, because we'll have bigger priorities. And having let Chesney gone, there's no one coming back from loan either. So we won't really have the options or the financial resources to buckle up in that position.
I just disagree a little bit with you, and I agree with everything you said about Cech. But I think a goalkeeper is our first priority. I think we've got replacements in and around for, let's say, we all know Sanchez is going to go. So we need to replace Sanchez, and we need to replace Cech, and we need to do it next summer. Ozil, if Ozil goes, then we may have a little bit of a problem, because I don't know what our budget would be. Let's say 100 million, I suppose. That's what it's been the last couple of seasons. So is 100 million going to be enough to play Sanchez, Ozil and Cech?
I highly doubt it. It depends who you bring in, though, right? I mean, it depends on the quality of players we bring in. Yeah. We don't necessarily need to bring in the big-name players. I mean, someone like a Jack Butland, for example, who we've spoken about a lot, might cost us 30, 40 mil, but in all reality, we could probably go to a different league and bring in a player who's half that price and maybe as good. You know, I don't know of someone specifically, I'm sure there are players at Arsenal Football Club who know the French league or the Spanish league and so on and so forth, the Dutch league, for example. I don't know. So, I mean, it depends on the quality of the targets. It does help that we have brought in a new sporting director who has contacts and who has, the names and phone numbers of agents and this and that, and he can get in touch with them to sort out a good deal. I do agree with you that a goalkeeper is a place that we need to strengthen. There's no doubt. I just doubt whether we will do it in this summer because of Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez potentially leaving. Mm. Or most definitely leaving.
Yeah, so even if you believe reports and rumours that Fika from Lyon, they're talking 60 million, like. So, and that's only reports that you read, but 60 million, well, you start to think, is Arsenal's budget going to be a lot more? If they're looking at one player for 60 mil, they know they might have to replace Sanchez. Are they hoping to get one more season out of Cech? I hope not. So, anyway.
It'll be a tough one, no doubt.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for your question again. Now, one here for you, Cole. It's an interesting one. Lacka Lamar 10. He usually asks a question, and this kid wants Lamar next season. Mate, I was just going to say, I don't know if I want him for 100 million. But anyway, we'll move on. That's not your question. I believe no matter which defender we buy, we'll still be conceding goals like the ones we concede against Barcelona, Bayern, United, etc. I think playing a high line plays into the opponent's hands. Do you agree?
I actually agree with that. I think, it comes with the risk of us playing a high line that we will get found out in some, like, counter-attacking situations and things like that. But more often than not, that usually results in us outscoring the opponent. And I think it's a good tactic. I think it works. And, it's not really going to change. But you could say this with any club. You're going to have defensive errors. And most of Arsenal's goals are kind of stupid defensive errors. It's not because our defence is shit, because it's not. It's really not. I think the Monreal, Mustafi, Koscielny back three is one of the best in the league, I'd say.
Say it again.
what do you want me to say again?
Yeah. Who was
you were taking a piss.
Who was your three at the back? Koscielny, Monreal,
Mustafi.
Mustafi are the best three in the
Premier League. One of the best, okay. Oh, okay. I said one of the best. Stop twisting my words, Tez, all right?
Righto, go going.
Yeah, if you put it in comparison with other teams, I think we have got one of the best. I think, you know, as I said, it was kind of a curse coming into the game that all the Arsenal players were going like, oh, we haven't conceded any when all three of them have started this season. It's only been six games, but oh, look at it anyway. But it's part and parcel with the tactics we play. And Wenger, being as stubborn as he is, he would never change that. And I think it works. It works in our favour 80, 90% of the time, so we wouldn't change it. But yeah, it's definitely a risk that we do pay for sometimes, as shown in the Manchester United game yesterday.
It is a tough one because, like you said, it can happen at any club, and defenders are going to make errors. But I like the style of football we play. I don't know. Do you agree, Schwinn? You like that style that we play, that we're not parking the bus.
Oh yeah, I mean, if I was a United supporter, I would give my left nut to watch us play in an offensive and attacking manner. I mean, let's not forget that the number one reason we all watch football is for entertainment. You know, we want our teams to do well, and of course, we want to win as much as we can. But why we started watching football as kids, or as, you know, as whenever we did, is because of entertainment. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So I understand the question, and it's a very, very good question, because defensively, as good as we are going forward, we are not as assured in defense. And despite the numbers we've had, despite, you know, the clean sheets we've had, and this run of form we've had since we've switched to a three-defender system, as a spectator, and albeit an amateur one, I never feel assured. You know, it always feels like the midfield is a little too empty. We've lost that extra man in midfield so that we can move someone forward and essentially play two number 10s in the form of Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez. We've lost that number 6. We've lost that pivot who can sweep, who can be our Nemanja Matic. And Granit Xhaka can build those qualities in his play, but we're asking more of him. We're asking him to be a little more attacking, you know, almost balance Aaron Ramsey in a way. So I understand the question. I appreciate the question. And I don't have an answer to the question because it's a very fucking good one. And honestly, even Arsene Wenger doesn't have an answer to that question. You know, we've lost to Bayern Munich and Barcelona for a fucking reason in successional years. So, but I would rather, as horrible as this sounds, I would rather watch us play attacking football. I mean, when the occasion asks, of course, you know, we can look into parking the bus a little bit and look on the counter. But if I saw my team doing that every fucking week, I'd blow my brains out.
I'd be the same. I don't mind parking a bus if you fucking 1-2 goals up and it's a top four team. You're thinking, fuck, we've got to hold this lead. Bit panic stations, you know, and you're 20 minutes out. But I don't want my team parking the bus for fucking, what was that, 15 minutes he was in the lead and he parked the bus.
Yeah, and to be fair, I don't think we're good at it. You know, I mean, if we had a manager like a Tony Pulis, then fuck yes, you know. Tony Pulis is not going to take Mesut Ozil to the next level. But he will take Mustafi and Koscielny to the next level.
In terms
of their positioning, in terms of their awareness. There's no doubt that our defensive coaching, our defensive positioning is questionable. And if we continue playing an offensive game, and if we hold a deep back line, then we'll be destroyed in midfield. We're destroyed in midfield as it is, with just two players in the center of the park. So you can do both. You have to choose one. And more often than not, we will choose the attacking sense, because Arsene would rather leave than watch us park the bus.
Okay, and you're listening to The Clock End Talk. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We are all there. And thank you, everybody, for the likes, follows and whatnot. @clockend_talk. So, guys, we're just going to touch quickly, because we've got a dead rubber coming up, boys. Europa League, what's your thoughts? Carl, let's go to you, mate. Coming up midweek.
Yeah, as you said, it's a dead rubber game. As much as I hate Joe Willock, I'd probably feed him to the dogs for that game. I think we just give out 9 youth players, 2 senior players, I guess.
Well, sorry, like that. We're playing Beto. I didn't mention that.
Yeah. So I'd probably say someone like Matt Macy in goal. Maybe Ospina to keep him sweet. Mohamed Elneny and Willock, that's a... If that was in the Premier League, I'd probably switch off my television. But against Barté, I'd probably accept it. Perhaps start Eddie with Nelson. Nelson right wing. Perhaps play Walcott in an unfamiliar position, because, heck, we've done that with every Arsenal player this season. Debuchy, Mertesacker, all the other ones. I'd actually give an opportunity for Josh De Silva to play in this game. I think I like the look of the kid. I think he's got good promise. He's got good potential to be in this Arsenal team in the future. And nothing's going to come out of that game. Maybe just increase or decrease the morale of players that play in that game. And I mean, I wouldn't liken it to a pre-season, as if we don't want to lose a game, and if we lose a game, then, oh, well, we've lost it. because we do want to win the game. It's still a European game at the end of the day, but it's kind of meaningless, and it's just kind of a run out for the youth players. See who's good.
Chambers.
Yeah. I forgot about him. Thanks for mentioning him. I'd definitely like to see him play in that game. I think when I've seen him this season, he's been a first rate centre back, especially. First rate centre back in terms of second team could potentially break into the first team if Koscielny or someone has a shocking performance like that again.
Yeah. Schwinn, what are your thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I'm in agreement. I mean, it's inconsequential. Get some young players some time. I'm not sure if Wenger will do that, just to keep some other players happy. And I mean, Giroud is going to be knocking on the door if he doesn't get to play in that game. I'm sure. Welbeck needs to still build his fitness so that he can, play those games for the full 90 minutes. He's still coming back from injury. We haven't seen him featured for lengthy periods of time. So I would like to see the young players get the nod over some of the senior players, especially players like Theo Walcott, who have been absolutely zero so far this season, other than one or two goals here or there. And get players like Josh De Silva, Joe Willock, Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah, sometime Ainsley Maitland-Niles, of course. I don't think it will happen, though. I feel a little skeptic about that. But we'll see what happens. It's an inconsequential game. I would obviously like for us to win. But to be honest, I'm just looking forward to Southampton next, because we need to bounce back from our result in the Premier League, and that's what I'm looking forward to next. I don't have an eye on the Europa League game, unfortunately.
And I didn't bring it up when we were asking questions because I forgot about it. But you did touch on Giroud, so Vish did ask. Have had a little discussion on Giroud's situation in the past two games, despite scoring twice. He seems as if he has mentality made up his mind to quit Arsenal.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and I seem to agree with Vish there. I mean, first of all, let me start by saying that Olivier Giroud is an extremely underrated player. He scored more goals for us than Dennis Bergkamp did. He's four goals behind Theo Walcott, and he has been for half the time at Arsenal as Theo Walcott has. I think people don't give him enough credit, and I think what really elevated Giroud in my mind is his decision to stay. I mean, what he did in the summer when he could have gone to Everton and maybe made a decent amount of money still and featured week in, week out, he's stuck around to fight for his place. I respect that a lot. And I'm sure that, you know, Arsene Wenger featured in that decision-making a little bit, because he has a lot of respect for Arsene Wenger, and he has a lot of respect for Arsenal Football Club. Having said all that, I wouldn't blame him if he wants to leave, because he's not playing. I mean, you cannot expect to thrust a player into a game once or twice a month or for 5 or 10 minutes of a Premier League game, or in Giroud's case, 10, 15 minutes, because Lacazette usually comes off by the 70th, 75th. You can't expect players to turn up all the time, because they might not be motivated. I mean, I'm not you know, just writing him off, because he has not performed, and you know that's pretty evident. But if he wants to move on, I could see a case being made for that, and I would wish him good luck. But I do want him to leave. I feel he's done at Arsenal. I feel he's not there anymore, and he's not performing. I mean, the two goals he scored against Huddersfield could have been easily anyone else. I mean, Ozil played a pass to him.
You do want him to go, you said, yeah.
Yeah, because I just don't think he's in it anymore. I think he's sort of gone in terms of mentality. I think he wants to play week in, week out. I think that's where players are at their best. And let's face it, the Europa League group stages is not the greatest motivation to perform.
Interesting. I'm inclined to
disagree with that, because I think Giroud's a very valuable asset to this club. I kind of contest the fact that you say he's very underrated, because I don't think he is. In terms of the full 90 minutes, I don't think he's good enough. In terms of coming off the bench, I think he's absolutely superb. He's phenomenal, because he brings that physical presence. He has a little bit of pace coming off the bench, more than the defenders who are on the opposing side, who've kind of, the stamina's dwindled towards the 75th minute, because that's when Wenger always likes to put on his players. But I think he's a very valuable asset off the bench, and that's bound to upset Giroud, as you've touched up on. But I don't think he's done at Arsenal. I think he's still a good part player, and whether he wants to do that and put his love for the club above his own playing time is up to him. But I'd be very sad to see Giroud go.
And don't get me wrong, Carl. I mean, I would be too. And I just feel that this system that we've switched to, Giroud and Walcott have been victims because of the switch, because it doesn't maximize what they can do. Mm. Another bigger point, which is probably away from just Giroud specifically, is that irrespective of who we are playing, right, if all our players are fit, Arsene chooses to go with his strongest 11. Whatever his strongest 11 is for a particular season, he chooses to go with that, irrespective of who you play. If you play Southampton away or if you play Man City at home, it's going to be the same players because those are the players he believes in. I think that's a big mistake that most football clubs make. You know, you should switch up tactics depending on who you're playing and how they will play. And for some reason at our club specifically, we don't see that rotation. You know, yesterday Man United came and Zlatan wasn't even on the bench. Rashford was on the bench. Who expected Lingard to start yesterday? I'll tell you, I didn't. There is a problem at our club, and you can put that to the manager or to whoever, that we don't rotate our squad depending on who we're playing. And I think Giroud is a victim of that, because if imagine that Burnley game, right? Playing Giroud in that Burnley game would have been good, I feel, because he provided a little something extra in terms of height. You're absolutely right. Mm. So that's one of the reasons I say I wouldn't blame Giroud, because he's a very good goal scorer. He's a great finisher. As soon as he touches the ball and controls it, that's when he loses it. That's when he's ineffective. On his first touch, whether it be a flick around the back of the defender or whether it be a near post finish, he's very good at that. So I see where you're coming from, and I would agree with you, but I think this is something more to consider when it comes to this question.
Mm. I agree. I mean, I definitely agree with what you said about the victim of the new system. That's the thing I want to touch up on now, because you know, this new system where we've had Lacazette in, I mean, the players have pretty much become reconditioned to playing balls in behind. And obviously, Giroud's that target man, and he's kind of that 2013, 2014, 2015 striker that we've had, where we've wanted to do link up from, you know, like maybe 30 yards away and then just building it up ever so slowly so you can compensate for the lack of pace so he can get into the box in time, because he likes scoring his close range shots. And I definitely agree with that. I just think that he should stay and definitely be on the subs bench. I don't think he's good enough for the first team anymore, but at the end of the day, he's a good part player.
And just moving away from Giroud a little bit, because Schwinn also brought up about Walcott. Now, hasn't he fallen from grace? Like, this system just doesn't suit anything he offers. So surely, come January, we've got to try and get some money for him.
Who's going to pay it, though? Who's going to pay his astronomical wages? I mean, he makes fucking 140K a week. For what? I mean, I respect whatever Theo Walcott has done for Arsenal Football Club, but at this point, it's diminishing returns. I mean, it feels like he's taking away more than he's giving, and at that point, you just have to question whether you need someone like that at the club. I mean, it's just so sad to see his, as you said, fall from grace, because 10 years ago, he was touted as one of the brightest prospects in the goddamn world, and now he's fallen off the face of the earth, and he can't control a ball for shit. Mm-hmm. I hate saying this, because he wears the prestigious number 14 at our club, which I'm so sad to look at every now and then, you know, whenever he's putting in a horrible performance. And maybe at this point, I'm just pulling all my frustration down on Theo Walcott, who didn't even feature yesterday. And, you know, because of the result yesterday, I'm just being a little bitch. And that I completely acknowledge that could be the case. But I just don't see any positive case being made for Theo Walcott, irrespective. What has he done in the last 3 years? I mean, he scored that one goal against Man City, I believe, at home, which was fucking phenomenal. But that's the only important thing I remember him doing. Oh yeah, and he scored in the FA Cup final, I guess. But we won that 3-0, didn't we? So get him out of our club as soon as you can, Tez, please.
Yeah, well, I just think it from a player's point of view. He's 28 years old. He's not getting regular first team football. He's got to be sitting on that bench. And I know, yeah, whatever, he's getting paid 140, whatever, it's getting paid a week. But he's got to be thinking, fuck, I'm 28 now. I've got a fucking, I'm going nowhere.
Yeah, and he's definitely not going to the World Cup. I can tell you that for sure. I mean,
definitely not.
It's just so sad because they could use him. They could use his skill set. But even Theo Walcott doesn't use his own skill set. I mean, he has the tools to be Raheem Sterling. You know, I mean, what Raheem Sterling is doing today is what Theo Walcott was doing 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
blinding defenders with his pace and then just finishing from absurd angles. So I don't know what's happened to him. I mean, maybe we've broken him, and I'm sorry if that's the case. But shed that weight off, because 140K a week is crazy money. And to think that we were offering Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who I love personally, 180K, thank God he's gone, because that would have been another rabbit hole to go down and tie him up for a 4 or 5 year contract, giving him that crazy money for zero output.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay, well, let's move on now, because let's quickly wrap things up. However, I just want to get your guys' opinions on, we had a World Cup draw.
We did, yes.
Mm.
Not that it matters the Ush win, but...
you dick.
You and the Italians are just celebrating your own little game. So, but anyway, who do you follow? Do you go there for the Mexicans?
I'm sorry, what's that? I heard the word Mexican. Did you ask me if I'm a fan of the Mexican team?
Oh, have you built a wall yet? Wall of, the wall hasn't gone up yet, has it?
let's not talk about any walls unless it's a wall that's stopping a free kick. But no, I'm actually a Germany fan. I mean, okay. I mean, as you guys know, I grew up in India, but I spent a decent amount of time in Germany, traveling every now and then because my dad used to work out there. So I've spent a decent amount of time in Germany. So, I mean, although I love the USMNT and I do follow them whenever I get a chance to watch them, but I'm a closet German. Well, not even a closet. I'm a pretty public Germany fan.
Okay, Group F with Mexico, Sweden, and Korea. So, Carl, obviously you blokes, what's your take on it all, mate?
It's a very interesting group. I think it's a very, very interesting group. Belgium, obviously, if you haven't kind of got already from my accent, I think I'm an England supporter. Belgium are a very, very good team. I can see them finishing top of the group.
Panama.
I'm hoping we actually win the group this year. I hope we actually get through this year, should we say. Panama, yeah, they could be a little... I'm not even going to say that they're going to be a surprise. They're going to finish bottom. It's going to happen. Tunisia, right? I think they might actually be quite good. I think they might cause us some problems. Belgium might be overconfident in terms of them, and they might get a draw against them. Let's hope that happens. But regardless of England, Tez, should we go on to your group of death that you're going to finish last in?
Well, just quickly, you're lucky you haven't got Iceland in your group, so. Australia's... I don't think we'll be there long, boys. look, I don't know. France, Peru, Denmark, what do you say? We're looking for a new coach, so Gus Hiddink, if you're not doing much, mate, come back. Other than that, I don't know. I don't think we'll get through. But never say die.
I can see Aaron Moy crushing Christian Eriksen's dreams, by the way, Tez. could be a thing that happens in the World Cup.
Could be.
I think you're hoping for a Jedinak masterclass.
Absolutely. He will come out flying, boys. That beard, don't worry about that.
Doesn't come close to Giroud.
Oh, Giroud's beard, yeah. Okay, you've been... we'll go through World Cup and everything when it obviously gets a bit closer, because there won't be much else talk about. So we'll probably touch base on some World Cup games and whatnot. But anyway, guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. You can follow us at @clockand_talk. Facebook us, hit us up for a message. We're always open to have a chat. You can download our podcast at iTunes and all other good Android devices and whatnot, wherever you get that shit from. Thanks, Carl. Thanks, Schwinn.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
No worries. Bye-bye.